Good morning. I'd love to say thank you to Dave and Bill. Bill, we're going to be talking about Hebrews 11:1, and Dave, we're going to be talking about Let's Grow Our Faith. And I want to say, is having a big faith something we can do? Is it something that we are able to accomplish? How many of you have ever heard somebody say, you need to have more faith, even the size of a mustard seed? How many of you had somebody talk about that, the faith the size of a mustard seed? When we talk about faith, we tend to always want to bring in the statement of even as small as a mustard seed. We get that teaching from Jesus. The disciples were trying to cast out a demon, and they couldn't, but Jesus couldn't, so they said, why? And then we get to Matthew 17, verse 20. He said to them, because of your little faith, for truly I say to you, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. A mustard seed or grain, the smallest seed in the garden, at the time, one of the smallest things they knew of. So the teaching is something like this. Even if your faith is the smallest possible, you can still do great things. You can still do anything, wonderful things. But why, my question today is, why is it that we remain focused on this point, the smallness, even as small as a mustard seed? And my thoughts kind of go towards, I worry a bit, maybe we use it so often that it becomes a effort to use the bare minimum, really. And what I mean is we look at something and say, what's the least I can do? I'm afraid maybe we sometimes tend to do that with the, well, as long as I have faith the size of a mustard seed. Let me describe it. When you tell your kids, go clean your room, you go, they're up there for an hour, you go up to check on them, they've been sitting on the bed, you can see the stuff kind of hanging out of the closet that they've stuffed in there, the stuff they've thrown under the bed, you can see the bare minimum effort, and they're sitting on the bed playing on their phone nowadays, right? Or how about this one? Your coworkers who are very clearly doing the bare minimum effort. You know who they are. They're the ones that show up just in time, if not late, and they're holding everyone else up because they're not there on time. They take up as many breaks as possible, and you know, you better not ask them, hey, can you get off your break and come help us here for a little bit? Nope, I've done my time. You can't ask me to do any more. Bare minimum sort of thing. And this is what I'm afraid we sometimes tend to do, maybe subconsciously, with this talking about as faith as small as a mustard seed. Instead of talking about faith as giants, faith giants or heroes of faith. That when we talk about Hebrews chapter 11, known as the faith chapter, that we can't possibly be like these people here. Talk about Abraham, how he left behind all that he knew, his family, his ties to his homeland. How can I possibly be like Abraham? Or how about Jochebed, Moses' mother, hiding her son for 3 months and then saying, I can't hide him anymore. I'm putting my faith in God and putting him in a basket, knowing hopefully God can take care of him beyond what I can. Or Moses leading God's people, the multitudes of people. How am I able to do that? How am I able to have the faith that Moses had? Or how about Rahab, helping the Israelites with her life on the line, saying, I have faith that God and the Israelites will take care of me because they are so powerful, I can see the power of their God. We look at it and say, I can't possibly be a person of that faith. And I want to say to you guys today, why not? Why do we believe that they are so different, though the Scriptures tell us we can have faith like them? The hardest one typically is James talking about Elijah was a man like us, and he prayed and for 3 years did not rain. We look at him and say, he's not a guy like us. I can't possibly be like him. We can, in fact, be these people of faith. That does seem to be the moral lesson of the mustard seed. It doesn't take much, as much as we fear, to be faith giants, heroes of faith. So, how do we grow our faith? It's honestly, we oftentimes like to think of it as faith is incomprehensible. That growing our faith is like a habit or a practice or an attitude. It's kind of got a flow chart of how it grows. Take, for instance, the story of Lazarus being raised from the dead. John chapter 11, there's a struggle. Lazarus has died, and if you put yourself in Mary and Martha's shoes, you're kind of thinking is, why, God? Why? Why me? Martha's at the point, not this Martha here, she has plenty of faith, I know that, but the biblical Martha, she's struggling. She's wondering, it doesn't seem possible to have faith here. She's trying to find something to cling on to, something to reach, but it's just out of reach. The scriptures say, if you only had been near Jesus, my brother would not have died. I think we can honestly kind of put ourselves in that spot where we think, God, how could you leave us here? How could you do that to us? And you move to the next step, and there's kind of this inkling of faith, this twinkling of it, a faith of a mustard seed starting to grow with Martha here. She says, I know God will give you what you ask. And Jesus says to her, your brother will rise. Have you ever had people say, well, you need more faith? That's kind of what's happening here. Perhaps it's the last thing you want to hear. You know it's true, but what good does it do you to hear people say you need more faith, right? She says, what we honestly want to say to those people who say that is, I know. I know in the last days, clinging to faith, she has something to cling on to. She's found something to, but it's still a struggle. And she's thinking, surely, Jesus, if you had been here when he was alive, you could have done something, but not now that he's dead. It's not possible. Then we get to verse 40 and 41. Jesus has told them, roll away the stone. And they say, are you sure, Lord? I love my brother, but by now he surely stinks. But you see that their faith has grown to the point of, I'm going to use action. They roll away the stone. Their faith was not yet complete, but they were willing to take that action. It resulted in reward. Struggling faith may get you to the clinging stages, but we've still got to grow further than that. Grow bigger than simply a mustard seed faith, right? We've got to get beyond that size. And it is to that, or with this in mind, that we get to our text today. We meet a man who has a bigger faith than anyone else in Israel. Why? How does he have more faith? And this is kind of point number one. I think there's a point of he learns his faith through his job. What is a centurion? A Roman soldier over 100 men. I think there's a point to see here. He had faith because he had learned faith elsewhere. Jesus was at once willing to go with him. And we kind of see, aren't we glad that whenever we ask God, he's willing to help. And right away, he gives us an answer. Now, it might be yes, no, or wait a minute, or wait for now, not right now. But we're not going to be ignored. That's something to take heart in, that God is listening to us. He says that. But we will get a response. The centurion didn't need Jesus to come. He believed that it could be done. He had faith much bigger than a mustard seed, as we can see. He was able to have faith because he has it in his profession. We see that with verse 8 and following. But the centurion replied, Lord, I am not worthy to come. Have you come under my roof, but only say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. Through his job, he saw it was possible. When you tell somebody to do it, you trust that they're going to do it, right? So he had plenty of faith, not small like a mustard seed, and that astounds Jesus. He had experience of believing, of trusting that something's going to be done whenever it said it's going to be done. Did you guys ever think about following God is not the only place that requires faith in our lives? That there's other places that require quite a bit of faith? You have faith that the next day will come. That's a bit tied to God, but that's true. You have a lot of faith that you don't even question it, right? You have faith in other drivers on the road. Maybe some of us have more faith than others, but we trust that they're not going to veer left and hit us, right? We have faith in our fellow man, a more generic thought. People will keep their side of the bargain, that they will do what they say they're going to do whenever we make a bargain with somebody. I'll do this if you do that. We have faith in our post office that we can send packages, no matter how valuable they are, and that they'll get there without somebody tampering with it, right? I'll even go as far to say we even have faith in our government that we have some faith in them, or else we would say, I'm not living here because this government, I can't trust them for anything. This centurion had heard of Jesus' works. We don't know how. So he says, if he says it will happen, I believe it will happen. Jesus found faith among the godless when he should have found it among the Jews. We find we have loads of faith in non-faith areas, things that we completely trust our lives to, and we didn't even know it. I'm going to skip the next slide here. Go on to the next. Point number two is verse 10. Faith that surprises God. Why would there be such a thing as faith that surprises God? Honestly, because we struggle to have faith. Maybe you think there's got to be an easier way, and in fact, there actually is. There actually is an easier way, but we tend to get in our heads and block our own ability to have that faith, because if it's anything dealing with God, it must be complex, right? But Luke 18, 15 through 17 says, "Now they were bringing even infants to him that he might touch them. And when the disciples saw it, they rebuked them. But Jesus called them to him, saying, 'Let the children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of God.'" In verse 17, "Truly I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God does not, like a child, shall not enter it." If you want to get the video ready, we're going to do that here in a second. And I thought, how does a child use faith? How do they view God? So I found this video where they kind of explain it themselves of their pictures of what faith in God is. With looking at how a child views faith, we see we complicate things. You saw the answers that they wrote. They're simple answers. A child takes it as a fact. Take it as a fact as a child would. Dad says it, I believe it, right? Kind of the same thing, really, with children. Whenever God says it, I believe it, right? I know my brother had faith in my dad when we'd go swimming. He would jump out to dad without having any hesitation that God or that dad wouldn't catch him. Sorry about that. And sometimes even he would have more faith than dad was aware of, and he would jump in when dad wasn't even looking, completely believing that my dad was able to protect him. The faith of a child, right? As adults, we're a little bit more of that. Once bitten, twice shy, we're a bit more hesitant to say, I trust in things. We more of want to have factual things laid out before us. May I also say that it's also a part of, and just because you accept it simply as a fact that God says it, doesn't mean that you can't later find things to back it up, right? We're told in verse 10 that when Jesus heard the words of the centurion, he marveled. Literally, Jesus admired this man's faith, and in Hebrews we get a very good definition of it. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. It's one thing to impress me or any person here. It's another thing to make Jesus say, wow, and that's what this man did. At this point in his ministry, Jesus has traveled many miles, encountered countless people, and had preached to many, performed miracles, healed the sick. But there's something different about this man that catches Jesus off guard, right? He says in verse 10, "I tell you the truth, I haven't seen such great faith in all of Israel." Let's be honest, this is a statement that kind of, if God were to say that about you, will make you swell with pride. But following this, Jesus is stating about Gentiles from all over the world will fellowship with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But many of the Israelites, the sons of the kingdom was prepared initially for them, would be thrown into outer darkness. And Jesus speaks of a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth. A very stark contrast to those who follow versus those who don't. But it all boils down to faith. Faith in Jesus. So we get to our third point, verse 6. How important must this man have been? The centurion servant is described as being paralyzed, a helpless situation. The servant was in a bad place, really. But somehow the centurion had heard of what Jesus had been doing, and he believed that Jesus could help his servant. And along with that, he decided, I love my servant so much, I'm going to go and help him. We all know of people who have conditions, who are going through a lot of struggles, like the centurion servant, really. He was willing to go out to all this trouble to help his servant. we're able to do the same thing for our fellow man in prayer, those who we love who are struggling with things. And it raises a bit of a hard question, is to look at yourself and see, how important are these people? Or the opposed, how small is your faith in how much God can help? Will we go to Jesus on their behalf for one reason or another? If we would, our request requires faith, just like the centurion had. We get to verse 13. He says, "Let it be done to you as you believe." We actually can limit what God is, we allow God to do by we say, "I don't believe God's going to take action here." We have little faith and it limits what God will do for us. 2 Kings chapter 13 talks about a king, or when Elisha was dying, he told the king to come, told him to bring a bow and arrow, and to shoot one out the window, and he did. And he says, this is a victory arrow, a victory shot. And he says, strike the ground three times, or strike the ground, and he did it three times. And then Elisha actually gets mad at him, and he says, you should have struck more than that. You should have struck at least five or six times. He's talking about victory over the adversaries that they had at the time. But through that, we can kind of see our faith needs to grow. We need to do more with our faith than just simply let it be as a mustard seed, right? Allow it to grow. Our faith can move mountains. Do we honestly believe that in our day and age, that faith, our faith in God, can do amazing things? Having complete faith is reachable. I love telling this story. A friend of mine who's a youth minister at near OVU holds what we call the OVU work week, really. What they do is they find houses that need painted. Maybe they can't afford it. Maybe they physically can't get up to paint it. And we had set up about six different houses. Well, this entire week, it had been an utter downpour. And one morning, a guy named Pat Pugh, he's also a preacher in Cincinnati, got up and said, "Today, we're going to paint." I prayed to God, and I know that He's going to answer my prayers. And my friend was just sitting in the back going, "What are you doing? You have just obliterated the faith of all these young kids there. How are they ever going to recover from that?" But they went out, and they started painting. It was raining, just not in any of the areas where they were painting. Faith in God. And they could see how close the rain got, but it never rained on the houses. It was quite amazing. I wouldn't have believed if I hadn't experienced it myself. So, the lesson this week may push you. Push you to talk to someone. Push you to pray for someone who's in need of God, in need of help, whatever it may be. It should challenge you to examine your faith in God. Where am I at in my growth of faith? Is it a mustard seed? Is it a giant tree? I hope it helps us to see how possible this week is to have a lot of faith in God and what He can do. Faith that God can bring people in. Faith that God is able to be found. We're able to know God in a deep relationship. If you're struggling this week, find someone that you look up to that you know has faith. Talk to them about their faith. Or pick up a book, or read scriptures about people who had faith. Examine the lives to grow our faith. And seek to learn more about faith. The centurion had faith and was rewarded. He had a burden, and he went to Jesus, and he laid that burden before him. Jesus heard his plea and answered his prayer. And that servant who never met Jesus, their life was changed. He had faith that impressed Jesus. Do we? Do we have a burden of our loved ones that we need to lay before Him? Are we willing to do so? Do we really believe in a place called hell that if we don't talk to people, tell people about Jesus, and convince them to follow Him, people are going to go to? Do we have faith that Jesus can save our loved ones? I think we have a point with the Bible of we need to have this kind of faith. We need to seek out this faith. Then we must go to Him on their behalf and see what God can do. We've seen what doctors can do. We've seen what we can do. What can God do? If we have never trusted Him with ourselves, today could be a day to change that, to say, you know what, I've kind of held back my beliefs, but today I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let God show me who He is, believing fully that He is capable. We have all these opportunities, and if anyone has these needs, you're able to tell me during this next song or any time throughout the week. But if you would please stand as Roger leads us in this last song.